Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally Episode 7, Season 12. We're over hump, we had the hump day last week. We're on the home straight now, folks. Thanks for staying with us so far. Hope you're enjoying what we've been doing so far this season. A few more bits and pieces coming up, all being well for next season. Again, the mythical new sponsor is almost upon us, he says. Fingers crossed. But in the meantime, we've got the normal roster. We've got on my left, I've got Hello Jack Bennion.
Hello, Tony Simpson.
And on my right, I have our man from Del Monte. We have Ryan Champion.
Hello from the sunshine.
Please tell me you're in a white suit. Please tell me you're in a white man from Del Monte suit.
Unfortunately not. Shorts and flip-flops.
Of course he is.
He's from Yorkshire anyway. He's going to court.
He's from Yorkshire.
Oh, that's harsh.
I know, yeah. I know, that's normally a Scouse one, that, to be fair. So
I'm just jealous I'm not in Barbados, that's all it is.
Yeah, I'm. To be fair, I'm jealous. Let's not even go there. Without further ado, Ryan Champion, just so you know, you had the weight, obviously, as I said to you last week, of the Absolute Rally listeners and obviously, you know, all your followers on Twitter and things like that and the followers on Absolute Rally, and you finished 10th.
We finished 10th, which I'm quite happy with. I don't think we could have done a lot more in the Evo. So some pretty quick cars in front of us, World Rally cars, and the super modified 900 kilo cars that they have here as well. So quite happy really. They had R5 cars in the Group A class as well this year. So just beaten by an R5 car in our class by 10 seconds. So happy enough really, despite your mocking.
Right. You know I'm playfully mocking, but just so you know, pretty much 2/3 of what you've just said I wrote on my pad before you even said it.
Right, okay. But yeah, well, it's nice to see you've done your research anyway.
I've no, mate, honestly, we were watching and there was some great stuff, and there's a new guy. Have you seen this guy on Twitter? He's kind of come about, the rally analyst. I don't think you've seen it at all.
I just picked it up last night. Actually, I was on there last night and picked up the rally analyst, deciphering all the facts and figures and taking it to a new level. I think it's fair to say.
I think somebody's seen what Gary Boyd does. And by the way, I've got a Gary Boyd fact for you in a minute. Jesus. Anyway, we got a message by the way off Gary Boyd. There was a zero left off the Volvo. Mileage, it shouldn't have been 340,000, by the way, just so you know, Jack Bennion.
All right, thank you.
So there was a zero left off the end. He messaged me afterwards.
But it's that kind of mistake that's going to have the rally analyst taking over his spot if he doesn't fuck his game up.
Oh, do you want, I'll tell you what, before we go any further, boys, let's do it. Rally trivia, here you go. The point system for 25 for a win, 18 for a second, etc., was introduced in 2010. Mika Hirvonen won Rally Sweden in the open events in 2011 and was 10 points ahead of Ogier as well as 15 points ahead of Loeb. Since March 3rd, 2011, nobody named Seb has ever had more than a 10-point lead in the driver's points table until May the 20th, 2018.
Until now.
Dun, dun, dun. So there you go. I'm just putting it out there. I'm sure there was people out there, maybe the rally analyst knows. Maybe we should get them both on for the quiz.
Oh, wow. That would be brilliant.
Yeah. That's work towards that. Anyway, we're getting giddy about stuff we probably shouldn't be getting giddy about. Ryan Champion, it's 11:30 in the morning. It's late afternoon for us here. When is the first drink being drunk, if that makes sense?
Well, I'm going for lunch shortly, so there may be a beer with lunch. but you know, it's a nice afternoon. There might be an odd rum in the sunshine. Let's see.
Oh, okay.
He's going to need one after 20 minutes with us, Tony.
True. That's to be fair. I'll tell you what is really, really impressive. And obviously, you were doing the event, Ryan. I'm sure you were keeping up to speed with Jeffrey Panson and obviously Paul Bird and how close it was between them. And I know obviously Birdie ended up third. But I seen some pictures on Twitter earlier of Birdie's car getting put back into gravel spec up in Kelso today. So getting ready for the Carlisle stages the weekend.
Yeah, it's already flown back to England. I think it was that yesterday it flew back, and yeah, he's like you said, Neil Buckley and his team are already well on the way to getting it ready for the week, the rally's weekend. The rally at the weekend, even. I can't say it.
Some freight agents, that's all I'll say. Some freight agents. Anyway.
Was that just a ploy for your own company?
we help Buckley's out a little bit. That's all I'm saying. Not getting involved too much. To be fair, Rally Barbados do a fantastic job of turning stuff around when they want it to come back. And we kind of work a little bit with Rally Barbados organisers. But they did all the hard work of getting that on a flight to get it back. But it's just, I knew it was coming back that quickly. All joking aside, I did say that kind of half tongue in cheek. But just to see it in Kelso, in gravel spec, just kind of went, Jesus, yeah, that's, I shouldn't be amazed by this stuff. I've done that job for 20 years, so I probably shouldn't be amazed when I see something like that. But still, there you go. There you go. We'll talk about Carlisle stages a little bit later on anyway. Ryan Champion, obviously we had you fleetingly last week. We covered all the big stories, or the big story of the week. Was there anything said about in Barbados? Obviously, Chris is kind of well known, and Chris, we know Chris likes to have a little bit of run when he went out to Barbados a few years back when you were out there. Was there any kind of any whispers or anything over in Barbados?
Yeah, absolutely, because he has huge support here. I mean, obviously, Chris came and did the rally twice, and he won it twice. So, you know, he has an awful lot of fans here. They're very knowledgeable in this part of the world about WRC. They follow Chris's every move, really. So, a lot of disappointment over what happened. And also, I believe quite a few messages went in his direction to say, get on a plane, come over here, we'll find you something to drive. But unfortunately, he didn't take anybody up on that offer, but he definitely has support from this part of the world.
This is amazing. I genuinely think there's also a taxi driver talking at the same time as you, Ryan Champion. Did anybody else get that? Did you get that feedback then, Jack Banging?
I had some interference, yeah, but I couldn't hear what was actually being said.
It was pretty much, it was like a taxi driver. I'm going to leave that in. I can't not leave that in, because I think that kind of sums up quite a relaxed Barbados. But you were saying with regards to Chris, there's some fans over there. There was some attempts, obviously, to get him over there and get him in a car that quickly.
The organisers would love to have seen that. They'd love to see him come back. As I said, he's still got a big following here. He's got a lot of fans here, and they'd love to see him back. And let's hope we do see him in WRC next year. But if we don't, I'm sure he'll be very, very welcome at events like this in the future.
Absolutely, absolutely. Right, let's crack on, boys. Obviously, it's Rally Sardinia this weekend. I'll come to you first, Jack. There's an air of I don't know what I'm picking up. Obviously, we've just been talking about Chris, and of course, we'll talk about Chris for the next how many months it comes down. He'll always be mentioned. But there is a kind of tinge of sadness, but also by the same token, I suppose there's probably an interest in the fact that you guys have done a feature today with regards to Craig Breen and the possibilities of Craig and Mads completing the season as certainly as the front running two cars for Citroën. But perhaps, you know, is this now adding a little bit of pressure to Craig to perhaps go out and maybe push that a little bit harder than what he has been doing?
I suppose it could be perceived that way. For me, I don't think so. I don't think anyone expects Craig to be on Chris's pace at this point in his career and at this point in his Citroën career. And, you know, this is not one of Craig's favourite events. It's not one that he particularly enjoys. But I'm sure he'll be looking forward to kind of spearheading that Citroën team. And, you know, let's not forget some of the drivers through the years who have been the number one driver in that team. You know, it must be a great honour for Craig to take that on. I saw Donegal, I think it was, on social media, had tweeted something like 9 years ago. Craig was getting ready to start Donegal in a little Fiesta ST, and now he's leading the Citroën World Rally team. So however he looks at it, it's a great thing for him. And no, I don't particularly think there is a lot of pressure on him. I think there's an acceptance that Chris was the number one driver in that team and that he was the fastest driver in that team. So I don't think there's any unnecessary pressure on the next two to kind of fill that gap, because, you know, I don't think they're at that point yet.
Jack, I like that. I like that response. But I'm going to go to Ryan Champion. And the reason why I'm going to go to Ryan Champion, because he's obviously the other person there. But, Ryan, if you could regress back to being slightly younger than what you are today, and you were in the same position as Craig, would you be seeing this as an opportunity?
Well, he's got to see it as an opportunity, but like Jack just said, I think he's probably clever enough not to put too much pressure on himself because of the situation he finds himself in. But, you know, ultimately, if he can do a good job for the remainder of this year, then the team need him. The team need him more than ever. So it's, yes, it's definitely an opportunity because he can secure a fantastic seat for himself next year.
It is exciting times in some ways and sad times in another. Jack, something I wanted to mention, obviously last week there was a report, I think it went out via Autosport and obviously latterly and maybe MN as well with regards to Tommy Mäkinen's interest. A few days later I seen something which I think it was in Finnish press, Tommy kind of distanced himself from that. So all of a sudden we're back to maybe one opportunity, and of course you and I dissected that last week with Michel Nandan.
Yeah, it's you know, we discussed already whether was it too soon to start thinking about next year, and I absolutely don't think it is.
Right, it was Ryan Champion. I blame Ryan Champion. It was only 3 weeks ago that Ryan Champion went, no, it's much too soon to discuss next year. So I blame Ryan Champion.
This kind of thing usually happens, doesn't it? There's always some sort of catalyst mid-season that kind of sends the driver market into a spiral. But yeah, I think, you know, Chris has got Chris is definitely in a difficult position now because he's not got a seat for the rest of the season, and you know, you can be forgotten about very quickly in top line motorsport, sadly. So Chris is going to have to be working very hard. I hope he's got some, you know, some good people helping him behind the scenes now to keep his name in there, and you know, to keep him being talked about by some of the other manufacturers. I think whatever happens, he'll be looked at, because I think we've got more seats than we have got rally winning drivers at the minute. So Chris Meek is a proven rally winner. And you know, every team has got to be looking at him as an option to have in their team, as far as I'm concerned. And coming back to Craig, on a similar note, you know, I don't think Craig's season has changed at all by what's happened, because I think Craig was fighting for his seat for next year anyway. You know, he's at a very early stage of his WRC career, and is, you know, he's not won a rally yet, and anyone who's at an early point of their career who's not won a rally yet is pretty much fighting for their seat in the WRC. You know, it's a vicious place to be, and you've got to work very hard to stay there. So Craig's just got to keep doing what he's doing, and there's one less driver in that Sitchin team for him to worry about. So, you know, his chances possibly have even gone up for next year, if you look the way you look at things.
Right, sorry, was you about to say something then?
I think that's what I just said, wasn't it, about a few minutes ago?
I think that's fighting talk.
Yeah, right. If anything, it does strengthen Craig's position within the team, because he's, you know, he's doing a good solid job, and as long as he carries on doing a good solid job, I can't see him not being there next year, because they'll want some consistency in the team.
Yeah. Now, I did pick up something the other day, whether people kind of jumped on the bandwagon a little bit. Did I see something, and by all, either you jumping on this one, with regards to Danny Sordo's entry? It was an admin error, but a couple of people read into the fact that it looked like he was withdrawn from Sardinia. Have I misread that somewhere?
It's not something I've seen, but he wasn't down to do that event because Hayden Padden was due to do it.
There was an admin error, and I think he appeared and then disappeared, and I think maybe one or two kind of people put two and two together and came up with 4,997.
I think those things can happen when you're sharing a car with two different drivers, can't it? You know, I think it's a fairly easy admin error. I don't think I'd read too much into that. And I think, you know, Hyundai would, if they could, would definitely field a fourth car for Danny, given the form he's in this year and how well he's performing. But you know, we saw flashes from Hayden in the last rally, didn't we? You know, him taking a bit of a step forward, and you know, hopefully without the error that he made, you know, hopefully he can continue to be error free for the rest of the season and sort of mirror Danny's form with a view to keeping himself in the WRC as well.
Right, before we move on to Sardinia, and I know I've said it tongue in cheek, and I took the mic a little bit, but you and I genuinely did have a conversation, must be 3 or 4 weeks ago, where you said, no, it's much too early to speculate. Turning that now, what's on ahead with what's happened, would you dare speculate on a potential Citroën lineup for 2019 at this present moment?
No.
Watch the splinters on that fence.
I think, you know, obviously Citroën have made no secret of the fact that they'd like Ogier back in the team. He's probably what they need in the team, but at the same time, M Sport have done an amazing job for Ogier this year. The car's better than it was last year. If he can win another world championship with M Sport this year, would he move to a car that still is only an occasional proven winner? It's still not a consistent proven winner. Maybe you might want the challenge. I mean, let's not rule that out as well. Maybe he would quite fancy turning that team around and going in and making the team his own. But I don't know. I think he'll want to see a little bit more about how the rest of the year plays out before he starts making any decisions.
Okay. Well, I'm sure this will be an ongoing debate, folks, for as we crack on. But Rally Sardinia this weekend. Right, you'll be pissed. So it's probably you're the wrong person to ask about Rally Sardinia. But I'll tell you what, who did send us some quite interesting facts. Trev couldn't be with us this week. But Trev did send us a message. Trev does homework and sends it to us. This is what I like, boys. So no pressure. Just saying when you're not on. Just send us something. Anyway, the message he sent us over. Like Jack, I'm going to read it verbatim. Like Jack, I have always laughed at people who say that Danny Sordo is a tarmac specialist. The link below is, I think, the first time he drove on gravel at WRC level. Have a look at the times and remember as well that the likes of Chris and drivers like that had done a lot more gravel and tarmac on events back then. And I've just clicked on. It's EWRC, of course, our favourite website. And it's the Super 1600 or the Juniors. And it's really interesting of kind of where are they now. But Danny was eighth and Costa. Oh, God, do you know what? I used to be able to pronounce this one. Ryan, help me out. Can you remember Suzuki Ignis Super 1600? Costa
Katiyama.
That's him.
Oh, Katiyama.
There you go. He won. Chris Meek was second. Umo Arva was third. Do you remember him? Ran a private Citroen C4 for a bit as well.
Estonian driver.
Yeah, Guy Wilkes fourth. Comrad Rattenbach fifth. Another one who moved on to, of course, the Citroen. The privately run Citroen. Luca Betti was sixth. Piggy Anderson seventh. Danny Sordo eighth. Marco Baldacci ninth. I'm amazed that Punto finished. And Martin Prokhov, who, of course, is back this weekend in a 2016, if you like, World Rally car, which did make me smile. And I do talk about this a little bit later on with Martin Holmes in the podcast. But Martin Prokhov was back this weekend as well. So the return of the perennial privateer. But anyway, interesting reading. That was Danny's first kind of gravel event. And I think that's the point that Trev was making there. So the reason why I was reading that out, boys, is that you don't do any homework when you're not here. Trev does. Just saying. Just saying.
Well, some of us have a busy schedule, don't we, Jack?
Yeah, you know, I have enough homework writing pages of MN.
Oh, and Ryan's on the rum already. There you go. He's dropped his phone.
No, that wasn't me. I'm sat still.
Oh, all right, then. Absolute. All right, well, we'll move on. Couple of bits and pieces.
I hope you're going to cut that out.
No, no, not at all. I don't cut stuff out, Jack. I'll leave all the good stuff in, like last week where you and Trevor.
What did happen, Jack? Did you just fall over?
No, I haven't moved. No,
I don't know. Well, clearly somebody else is on the line, and I feel like somebody else is listening in.
It's a taxi driver.
It's a taxi driver. That's been before. Jack.
You just dropped the change.
Where are we? Very quickly. Toyota not rushing into any suspension fixes for Yaris Tank, in inverted commas. Where's that name come from, Jack?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. It's good, isn't it? Tank. Yeah. Apparently some people in the service park are referring to the Toyota as a bit of a tank. Yeah. So that, I think it's come from Tom Fowler, who's the technical director at Toyota. But yeah, they've basically said they're not worried. They've had a few sort of unfortunate incidents with the car where they've had suspension breakages or things go wrong with the car. But then they think it's more sort of bad luck rather than any weakness in the suspension parts or anything like that. So they're not too worried, and they've got a decent driver to lead that team. In fact, last year it was Tanak and Latvala 1-2. So they look like they've got a good chance.
Do you know what I got a little bit excited about this week, boys? And again, the child within kind of kicked in a little bit. And the man who did your T-shirts for you, Ryan Champion, of course, the wonderful Dan at We The Terrors, actually Yeah, legend. Absolutely. We love him to bits. Regurgitated a picture of a Tamiya, Yaris Will Rally car. Now, I've still got the Escort Cosworth Tamiya from about 25 years ago, the Escort Pilot one, gathering dust somewhere. And I must admit, I thought the days of having rally cars like that were long gone. Right, did you have a Tamiya rally car?
No, I didn't, honestly. I just had the models and the models you make, but never had a remote control one.
One did you have, Jack?
I had a 2001 Focus in Martini livery.
I've got a brand new shell, brand new Tamiya shell with that shell, with all the livery, and I never ever used it, and it's in a cupboard, brand new, never ever being used. If anyone wants to buy it, by the way, drop me a message.
I was just going to say I might be making you a little
maybe an offer because it's only gathering dust. I never did anything with it. Anyway, it's not where I was going with this.
All jokes aside, that Toyota, it's not going to like the coffee tables with the extra aero, is it? You know, little bit of spoiler coming off there. It's going to really compromise the aerodynamics. It's going to slow it down massively.
Yeah, not really thought that one through, have they? Not really thought that one through. But I want one, and I don't know whether you can get one over here. And my excuse is I want one for my lad. So if anyone's got one, let me know. Anyway, Elvin Evans, of course, had a cracking result last time out. Jack Benyon, you guys have picked up a little piece with him here. Evans geared up for Sardinia Challenge after upturning form.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, this. He did go well last time out, so nice to see him getting a bit of form back. And we talked a little bit about, you know, how he's had probably a little bit less gravel running than everybody else thanks to the Mexico crash. So, you know, hopefully that last event has given him a bit of confidence on the surface now, and he can start to bed into the being back on the Michelin tires. But it's not an event he did very well on last year, so it's going to be interesting. Sort of, it's good momentum coming in that he's done well in the last event, but bad momentum in the sense that this one didn't go so well for him last year. So it'll be interesting to see how he gets on this weekend. And it's an event maybe he's got a bit of an opportunity to make himself look quite good, because I think this is one of the events that Sebastian Ogier usually struggles with a little bit more compared to others. I think that's fair to say. So it's an opportunity for Elvin to get himself a little bit closer to Sebastian maybe this weekend and show a little bit of improvement.
Ryan Champion, I don't think you were with us the other week. I did read out quite a harsh message from a fan of the podcast with regards to, they were quite concerned by the fact that we felt Elvin was the real deal and there was better options out there, et cetera, et cetera. You know, at the end of the day, as Trev said, he is a world champion, WRC2 world champion. He's got the medal, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think he has. You know, you've got to have experience nowadays in WRC, because the stages are repeated year on year. Notes are so important, as we've talked about in the past. You've got to build that experience in a WRC car, and he's doing that. And I mean, you know, there's no two ways about it. He's got to start to prove himself now. He's got to have a strong second half of the year. But I do think he's got the ability to do that. He's shown speed. He just needs to show that speed a little bit more consistent now. But I think, like I said, he needs a good second half of the year, but I think he can do that.
I think so too. In fact, I really, you know, again, it's one of those ones that we kind of need him to, don't we? You know, we all got excited, I think, and you guys did, you know, I've made a feature out of it the last couple of years, Jack. You know, obviously, whether it's try to recreate something from years gone by, but obviously, you know, Elvin and Chris, when it comes to Rally GB time, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously that won't be happening this year. Although I did see something quite interesting. Sorry, I realize I'm going off now on another tangent, Jack, but I did see somebody tweet out about Chris possibly running in a private car, maybe the return of the DMAC car. And I don't know who does their Twitter feed, but it was kind of, oh, you never know type thing. But I'm not holding my breath, but it would be nice. But we do need Elvin, don't we? We need that British interest. We've got to keep that British interest to, you know, because we keep talking about this. There's so much money being spent in rallying at a competitor level, but you know, keeping new fans or getting new fans in year on year is getting harder and harder and harder.
Definitely. One thing before we carry on, just before a reader messages in and tells you you're wrong, Tony, he wasn't WRT2 champion. He got beat by Ezepeko Appi that year, but he did win WRC Academy,
of course,
in 2012.
Yeah,
so he's, I guess technically you can call him a world champion.
My faux pas, and thank you for putting me straight, Jack Benyon.
No, that's all right. But yeah, I think is big implications to Chris Meek being sacked. I think there's a lot of fans in Ireland who are behind him in the north and the south who got behind Chris and Paul and gave him a lot of support during their time in the WRC. He was an easy person to like, Chris, and still is, obviously, you know, not using the term was in terms of a sort of historic point of view there, but he was that man always fighting against the odds, wasn't he? He's that sort of success story that you like to see, where, you know, he has been knocked off a couple of times and then come back and fought his way back and shown that he's got the speed and earned this big opportunity with Citroën. So it's a narrative that people love and love to get behind. And him going is a massive blow, not just for the Emerald Isle, but also for the UK as well, for someone to get behind. And Elvin's got a lot of weight on his shoulders now, and, you know, he did win GB last year. But I think everyone needs to see more than that from Elvin before we start, you know, expecting more from him than we already do. You know, that win will always be marred slightly by the fact that he was on a different tyre to everybody else, and, you know, it doesn't really matter how much we go into the analysis of how much better that tyre was than everybody else's. Someone will always turn around and say, oh, well, he was on a different tyre, so, you know, he had an advantage, and, you know, those people aren't necessarily right. But he does need to show now. He's in a car with one of the best rally champions in recent years in Sebastian Ogier on the same tyres, and he's got to get closer to Sebastian, and he's got to start contending with him, you know, in the same way that we saw Oit Tanak do last year. You know, I think not many of us expected, probably looking at Oit's early career, him to be as probably as good as he's gotten now, because last year he was competing regularly with Sebastian Ogier for points and positions, and, you know, did beat him occasionally or got very close. So we need to see that same pace, Melvin, towards the second half of the year for people to start labelling him a future champion and really start getting him behind him in that sense.
Right, there'll be a level of expectation, of course, you know, coming towards the second half of the year, I suppose, from Malcolm, and I know Malcolm's done a piece as well with WRC, WRC.com, with regards to, you know, road position for Elvin. And also, you know, we didn't really mention him too much, right? You know, fantastic drive, of course, by Timo Sunnanen.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Sunnanen I think we expect it from the Timo Jokke stable, the young Finnish stars, to progress, but he certainly is doing. And if anything, that does probably ramp up the pressure on Elvin a bit further. But like you just touched on earlier, we need it for British motorsport. We need Elvin to succeed now, because if and we hope that's not the case, but if Chris didn't get a seat back in the World Championship next year, then he's our representative, and we want to keep the interest there, because while we didn't have a driver at the top, you know, we lost that interest in WRC, so we very much need him to do well and keep that interest in, you know, in UK motorsport from the wider audience, if you like. But I think, as Jack said, a real relevant point, he's got the best in the business as his teammate. He's got an identical car now, so he's in the best possible position to learn, and he needs to exploit that, and he needs to develop that. And he'll start looking now at the rallies in the second half of the year, where he's got the most experience, where he feels comfortable, and he has to start getting results on those rallies.
Jack, it's as Rice just said there, it is... that time where drivers do need to start stepping up. Is there any that kind of scream out to you? Obviously, we spoke about Andreas the other week. You guys have wrote a piece about Andreas as well this week with regards to, you know, there's been gremlins with the car. He couldn't quite get to grips with it. Now he feels he's got to grips with it. The gremlins are kicking in. He's another one really that perhaps needs almost to do that, press that reset button.
Yeah, definitely. Something I've not really heard mentioned, or maybe something people haven't considered. But, you know, if Hayden continues to be as quick as he was on the last rally and does actually string some results together, and Danny continues his form, you know, is Andreas' seat at risk? Because Danny, I think it's fair to say that he's been fairly disappointing to start this year. And, you know, he's mentioned in the piece in MN that he's not very happy with some of the problems he's had, and he's not quite been there with the car. But, you know, I really thought he would have been on the pace by now. And maybe that's over expectation for me, and maybe that's unfair for me to expect that much from Andreas. But when Thierry's going as quick as he is, and you know, obviously everyone's going to turn around and say, you know, Thierry's been in the car longer and he's had more of the development path of the car and all that sort of stuff. But you know, I thought by approaching mid-season that Andreas would be a bit closer to Thierry, but maybe, you know, maybe this is it now, and he appears to be a bit more positive about how the situation is, and was happy with his test after Portugal. So maybe we're going to see him kick on and perform better in the second half of the year. But you know, I think it, pretty much any driver apart from Sebastian Ogier has got to be a little bit worried about their seat, haven't they? Because there's a lot of people underperforming, or a lot of people who, you know, have got very competitive teammates breathing down their neck. So it's going to be a really interesting second half of the season. I think
Sardinia is kind of the beginning of that as well, obviously, with all what's going on. But just a little bit more from Trev. It's like he's with us, isn't it? Just his thoughts with regards to Sardinia, boys, whether you agree or disagree. But Sardinia is always a very rough rally, especially Montalerno, which is Mickey's jump on it. Expect some carnage in there. The surface is very well sandy as well. Last year, Ogier won Portugal, but struggled in Sardinia. Expect to see more inconsistency would like that with regards to setup. Nouvelle to win, if that helps. We've lost Ryan Champion now. It's just myself and Jack Benyon by the looks of things. Ryan, the powers of B, that is Barbadian. Is that even a term, Jack? Barbadian?
Barbadian. Oh, hang on. It's Bajan, right, isn't it?
Okay. Sorry. Well, there you go. We've lost Ryan Champion anyway. So in the meantime, folks, we're going to go to a little break and we'll be back in a second.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast with Tony Simpson, Jack Benyon and Ryan Champion. Listen to more episodes via absoluterally.co.uk. Follow us on Twitter at @absolute_rally. Become part of the community at facebook.com/absoluterally. And if you like what you hear, help us make more episodes. Become a patron at patreon.com/absoluterally. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. Without the power of cup and strings, and I think the man from Del Monte said no, basically. We didn't get Ryan Champion back. So we didn't get his prediction, and we didn't get his any other business, which I'm sure will be rum-fueled, and we'll find out.
We don't need his prediction. It'll be wrong.
Yeah, so will yours be. Now you've piped up. What's yours?
Ooh, now you put me on the spot.
Yeah.
Oi, Tanak.
Okay, you go on Tanak. Right. I'll tell you where I'm going to go.
Go on.
I'm going to go Yari Matti.
Interesting.
Yep. I think it's time.
Can I do one more thing that I think people should keep an eye on?
Go on then.
I think it's quite interesting.
Go on.
So I've done a Tony.
Yes, you have.
Takamoto Katsuta.
Yeah.
Second time lucky. Sweden WRC2 winner.
Yeah.
And he's in a similar kind of field with Jan Kopecky and Ole Christian Weber this weekend.
Yeah.
But on the entry list, he's down to be on Michelin tyres. And on Sweden, he was one of the only front runners on the Pirellis, which are obviously better snow tyres than the Michelin tyre is. So he's on the same tyre as everybody else in WRC2 this weekend. So I think we're going to get a proper measure of how much of a title contender he is this year.
I think WRC2 is going to be very, very interesting, of course, because we've got your favourite European driver.
Who's that?
He's making the trip across.
Christian Weber?
No. Your other one.
Oh, I don't know who my other one is.
Kaito.
Oh, Kaito Kajtanovic.
Yeah, he's making that
definitely
jump.
Definitely my favourite rally name.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, he's making that jump across as well. And of course, it's been quite big news with regards to, and the domino effect, by the way, and we talk about this a little bit later on the podcast with Martin Holmes, of the MRF. Tyres team that's been running Asia Pacific forever and a day. Garvey Gill and Glenn McNeil will be starting Sardinia, not as registered competitors, obviously, because the tyre they're running, the MRF tyre, is not homologated and it isn't registered for WRC2, but they will be running in the event. So not only will they be able to see where they're at and obviously where the tyres are against everybody else. A very, very tough start for the guys at MRF. Again, people I know very, very well. Tough event to start with. Wish them the very, very best of luck and hopefully they get some good data for next year. But yeah, it looks a busy field, WRC2, Jack Benyon.
Yeah, and just above WRC2, but probably on WRC2 pace, is a driver that I've just seen on the entry list called Piano.
Oh, Not seen that one.
No, that's a it's a new one to me. Apparently, he did the event a couple of years ago in an R5 car. So, yeah, look forward to seeing how the piano gets on.
Hope he's keyed in.
Yeah, I hope he plays to the tune of the other competitors.
Oh, you know that's gonna be kind of the lines that are getting trotted out, don't you?
Yeah.
The ebony and ivory, perfect harmony. That's what it is. Anyway, a couple of just bits of admin before I move on. Well done, Keith Cronin, shaking his new high-end IR5 down with various support over in Ireland. And I know high-end customer team running out of high-end as well. I've been heavily involved in making that program happen. But yeah, shakedown event over in Ireland, got a win. His brother was second, which I think is a great story in itself for the Fiesta R5. And yeah, obviously shaking that car down, ready for Ypres, which is the week after next. Of course, the next round of the BRC. Also seen some great images, not of him necessarily driving, but Craig Breen put some pictures up of the Citroen C3 R5 as well. And again, we talk R5 a lot more, Martin Holmes and I, later in the podcast. But R5 is the future. Whether it's the future nationally, that's something else that we'll be debating. Anyway, also well done, David Higgins, by the way, in the last round of the American Rally Association. Had a little bit of a battle. Barry McKenna. Get me mixed up with McKenna's. Dan McKenna, of course, former British Rally Champion. Barry McKenna was leading the event in that Fiesta kind of hybrid with the 2-litre wheel card and had run into some problems. And David picked up another win there. Anyway, I think it was the seventh on the bounce for him of that particular event. But well done. Anyway, any other business? Jack Bengian, have you got yours?
I'm ready, yeah.
Okay, go on. Shoot.
I've gone retro for my any other business this week.
Okay.
This weekend come in. Is the anniversary of the 1988 British Midland Scottish Rally.
Oof.
Do you know why that is significant, Tony Simpson?
Do you know what? It'd be dead.
You know,
it wouldn't be Ryan Champion.
No.
It was, say the date again.
88. And it was this weekend coming. So after our recording, it'll be the anniversary of this event. And it was won by Jimmy McRae.
Yeah.
In a Forte Cosworth with the cool white and sort of blue striped livery,
yeah,
and the epic wastegate noise that those
was that, was that the Shell Gemini car?
Yeah, that's the one.
There you go.
And it was significant because he was the first Scot to win that event for 25 years.
Yeah.
It was Andrew Cowan who'd won the previous one.
Yeah.
And it was his first win on the Scottish, his home event, in 11 times of trying. So he'd won pretty much every other major event in the UK and Ireland before that, but he'd always failed to win his home rally. So This weekend coming in 88 is the anniversary of McRae winning his first ever Scottish on the way to his fifth British Rally Championship, which is still a record today, as we know. And as you mentioned, Keith Cronin before, he's going for that record this year. Some other interesting things about the event. It was Didier Auriol's UK debut in a Forte Cosworth in a blue and yellow, not blue and yellow, red and yellow.
Yeah.
And he ended up in a ditch.
I think that was an RED car.
I think it was.
Run out of witness. Yeah.
You know the rules. If there's any excuse to mention today Oriel, then I'm gonna go for it.
Yeah,
so I did. Second was Malcolm Wilson in one of the Vauxhall Express.
Oh, okay.
And he beat a lot of turbocharged Sierras and other turbocharged four-wheel drive machinery to take second in a bit of a giant killing result. But that's not where the giant killing ends.
Go on.
Oh no, Tony Simpson.
I'm ready.
Colin McRae.
In the Nova.
Yeah.
Ninth overall.
And that was one of the events that kick-started sort of his reputation in the UK and really sort of got people recognising him. So there's some great images, if you've got the video, which I have, on VHS. That's how old it is.
Were you impressed how I could just pull that off the bag straight away there?
Yeah, very impressed.
There you go. See, I'm not as daft as what you think I am. It's not just you and Ryan Champion that
I don't think you're daft at all. I'm just impressed with that knowledge. It's good. It's good knowledge.
Good knowledge. Right.
One more thing.
Go on.
Very quickly. Last week, I asked the listeners to tweet in about who was older than me.
There were some bits and pieces flying around. I thought there was an obvious one. Say again?
You said you had one last week. Who do you think you are?
I hope Marcus Grunholm.
No. No, not Marcus Grunholm.
Okay. Yeah. Go put it straight then.
One that was mentioned on Twitter quite a lot was Stig Blomqvist, and he wasn't, because he is younger in days than Chris Meek. He was 38 when he won his rally championship, but he was younger in days.
Okay.
I'm not accepting that answer. Sorry if you sent that one in.
Okay, go on then.
Harry Mickler was the oldest at the age of 41 in 1983.
Okay.
And Sebastian Loeb in 2012 was the other one. So they were the two. Sebastian Loeb in 2012 and Harry Mickler in 83.
Well, there you go. There you go. Well, my only other business this week is with regards to, I'm back, I've dusted down the driving gloves, I'm back in a rally car this weekend, which is quite nice. Which I'm doing the Carlisle stages, which has epic stages, which if you've watched some of the things that Jack's just been making reference to, British Rallying back in the day, it is in Kielder, Kersop and those stages. Epic start to the rally, three mile little short sharp shock, and then straight into a proper 14 and a half miler, Newcastleton, which again is another one which will take you back to the old REC days. If you've watched old videos and stuff like that, the names of stages that are synonymous with the event back in the day when it was going, you know, Wales, Scotland, England, and yeah. So really looking forward to it. We did a great thing yesterday with Matt Edwards, which will probably be part of the podcast next week. We ended up going to do something with Matt, and we did a little bit of recording, and we had some fun with it, and yeah. But we were shaking the car down and doing some tyre testing yesterday. And Matt came along, which was good fun. And yeah, so looking forward to it. Hopefully the organisers will sort out the seeding, because it's the worst seeding I've had in 20 years of rallying.
Well, Matt's car number one on the event, of course.
Yeah. Do you know what car number I am?
No.
I am 98.
Are you running actually 98th on the road, though?
Well, I've...
Because we know about the new yeah. seeding. Is that going to affect things at all? I'm not sure.
Well, I've queried it, and I was going to be running 98th on the road. So
Out of 132 cars, I think it was last time I checked.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Ish. Bear in mind, I haven't finished outside, I think, of the top 50 on a national event.
Oh, you're going all Ryan Champion.
Oh,
you're
sorry.
Going all Ryan Champion. Here come the excuses.
Yeah, I know. So, yeah, anyway.
Just kidding, mate. 98, did you say?
Yeah, shocking.
Yeah, 98's a bit, does sound a little bit too far back, but I can only hope that it's something to do with the way the event's being seeded this year and you're actually a little bit further forward than that.
Well, hopefully we'll find out. Anyway, listen, as ever, really, really excited to go and do the rally. We'll talk all about it next week. We'll do the feature we did with Matt as well, and no doubt we'll be talking Sardinia. Ryan will probably be pissed somewhere. So whether we get the man from Del Monte, Trevor Agnew will be back with us. Jack will be back. It will be me. Of course it will. You'll be back next week, won't you, Jack?
Yeah, I will.
Okay, you're playing hard to get on this now.
No, not playing hard to get this week. I might do in a couple of weeks, but not next week.
Okay, there you go. Folks, we are going to go to a little break, and then we've got a really nice piece with Martin Holmes and I talking all things ERC, Asia Pacific, R5, the fallout from Chris, as you can have with Martin, very candid, very open, and a great man with some stories as well. So Martin joins us after this break.
You're listening to the Absolute Rally Podcast, bringing you the biggest guests, the latest news, and in-depth analysis of all the goings-on from across the world of rally. Help us make more episodes. Become a patron at patreon.com/absoluterally.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally, and as ever, it's always nice to have Martin Holmes on during one of our seasons, and it's nice to welcome you back again once more, Martin. Hello, how are we keeping?
Well, not too bad. Things are fascinating with my end of the sport, so that's exciting to talk about.
That's one of the reasons why I want you. There's so many things that I want to talk to you about today. Whether we'll fit it all in, I really, really don't know. The big story, of course, at the moment, Martin, is what's happened with Chris Meek and what Citroën Racing have done. I'd just be interested to get your take on what's gone on and how you see things moving forward for both parties, really.
Well, Chris is obviously the number one thing as far as we're concerned. He is the only successful British rally driver these days. And of course, if we don't see him much more in the future, what does that say about our sport? And that, for me, is the biggest worry about everything. I don't know whether you've got a lot of insight into who's going to be the next great British driver. So many people are on the horizon at the moment.
There's Does the WRC and does the promoter have, and I use this term very, very loosely, a responsibility to most of the countries that of course commit to the championship every year, in that they need to find a way of ensuring that drivers are kept in the sport? You know, obviously you're just talking about, you know, the Great British Hope in Chris Meek. You know, obviously we've got Wales Rally GB and things like that. Do you think the promoter's got a responsibility to try and keep some of these drivers in?
Well, you've got more than one party involved. You've got the FIA, you've got the World Championship promoter, you've got the federations involved in having schemes. I mean, perhaps I'm wrong to discount Elvin Evans and everything we discussed, because he still is the other British driver in the frame, as it were. But when you consider the FIA, I think that they've got pointing in the right direction with their ladders of opportunity. They've got the junior system. They've got the WRC2. They've got the World Rally Championship. And I think they've laid out the structure for people to progress in the sport if the people concerned take up the opportunity. Well, I don't think they are taking up the opportunity. When it comes to the promoter, there are more than one promoter in the sport. You've got the promoter of the World Rally Championship. You've got people like who are promoting the European Rally Championship. And in both of those, we've got these junior systems in place. The thing is, it's the British people themselves that don't seem to be doing very much about following up.
In what way is that supporting, you know, financially? Is that supporting from getting behind the sport? Where do you want to go with that?
The place I'd like to go with that is having the federation taking more active interest in developing young talent, bringing the sport to the attention of the people, the potential supporters of the sport, explaining what's going on, and encouraging them to support new people coming along. Now, we see in other countries this happening a lot. In Italy, we've got the Kasai system. In France, we're always getting young driver schemes going on. But we're not getting very much from Britain, and I think that is half the problem.
I guess that obviously falls at the doorstep of the MSA, and I guess, you know, with our new boss, as it were, in inverted commas, I like saying that, Sir David Richards, perhaps we might have somebody who's got the sport at heart finally.
Well, they've got more ways to point than just the way we want them to point in relation to young drivers. They've got the whole structure of the support of the sport to develop for the future, forever making things stable for the future and sustainable. And of course, that's the same for the MSA as far as Britain is concerned, and for the FIA so far as international rallying is concerned. I just feel frustrated. We don't seem to be getting the results that we want. The reason for that, I can't really say too much, but, David Richards is going to be, must be in the right direction anyway.
Do you feel that, and there's a couple of other things I wanted to touch upon, it's quite funny how we've kind of ended up at this point already. Do you feel that the WRC is kind of a straight two now? We've got quite a lot of young drivers now that have gone straight to the junior championship and have kind of bypassed the national structures. I think, for example, young Tom Williams, he's going to do a couple of BRC rounds this year, I think. But, you know, there's a driver that's, you know, from a cost effective point of view, it was far more cost effective for them to go straight to Junior World Rally Championship, and do that for, you know, miles per pound or per dollar or whatever currency you want to use. That was the way they worked it out, and it worked out better for them. And I'm looking around at the moment, and I'm looking at several other kind of championships, and I was going to ask you about, you know, Asia Pacific for example. You know, these other FIA championships, people are missing them out now and just going straight to WRC.
Well, European Rally Championship is, I think, it's very strong, and but I can't say the same for most of the other regional championships. I mean, we saw at the weekend the Canberra Rally, which is the Australian edition of the Asia Pacific Championship. Three championship contenders on that rally. Three. We looked at the African Rally Championship at the beginning of the year, and I think there was one, was that right?
I think so.
And in the end, I got the impression that the rules were just changed so that anybody having a FIA homologated car could score points, which I don't think was the original idea. So in areas, things are going well. In the European Championship, you've got these two-level junior championships, and that's very is good.
And you see that working, obviously. You know, I was thinking quite a lot, because obviously we had the Acropolis at the weekend, and I was trying to keep an eye on that and looking at what was going on there and things like that. And then I kind of took a moment where I took a step back and thought, you know, ERC and, you know, obviously got merged with IRC. And I remember IRC being incredibly strong with factory teams. You know, you think about the way it was with the Super 2000 cars. And, you know, we've kind of come full circle. Granted, the WRC wasn't what it is today. We had two manufacturers there in Ford and Citroen, and everybody else seemed to go to the Super 2 option. But I just wonder whether now the ERC is in a situation where you've got drivers who will register, you know, to do their home event, but not necessarily do the championship.
Well, you said you were looking at Acropolis Rally recently, or last weekend. Things are not quite straightforward in the European Championship, because some rallies, including the Acropolis and the Cyprus Rally, don't have categories for the junior drivers. And of course, in the World Championship, there's only 5 of the 13 rallies which are going to have a junior thing, so you can't find juniors everywhere. Interesting when you mention, of course, about IRC. That makes us think back to our good old friend Chris Meek. And of course, one of the proudest days I've had in my last 20 or 30 years must be to see Chris winning the IRC. That was a wonderful occasion, when helped with everything from Persia, Britain, and we got the job done. It'd be nice to go back to those.
There was something very special. What I did find quite interesting was the reaction to people within the sport when it was announced what happened with Chris. And I did read something from Mark Van Dalen, of course, who was heading up Kronos at the time, who ran those programs, who felt that the management had let Chris down a little bit.
In what way? At what time did was he let down?
Well, I'm only repeating what Mark said. You know, Mark Van Dalen said, you know, I'm kind of regurgitating something that I read that he was quoted as saying. Obviously, we don't know the full internals of things, what have gone on. I'm not saying that he does. I really, really don't know. I just thought it was an interesting perception.
You're speaking about...
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting perception that somebody that had managed Chris. And that, I guess that's what it comes down to, isn't it? It's a case of managing these drivers. And there's somebody that managed to get the best out of Chris, and his perception was that maybe being let down by the management.
Insofar as the management has been unstable at Citroen Racing, and I mean, the merger with Persia, all these different things. You know, they've had a range of different chief engineers. We've had a range of different principal heads of teams and things like that. That can't do anything to help. And of course, the difficulties which they've had with the latest version Citroens, not only the World Rally Car, but obviously things are not perfect yet with the R5 Citroen. That hasn't helped the general Citroen cause at all. To what extent that's been the basis of Chris's potential downfall, I don't know, and to what extent it is in fact been generated by Chris's character about his the way that he approaches the sport. I really don't know. I keep hearing stories about how difficult it is for Chris to get the maximum out of what he's trying to do. I take a lot of respect for the way that he can take some advantages, like when he's had world championship rallies and he's had good starting positions. He hasn't actually always thrown it all away. He's had some really impressive victories recently. So where the root really, root of the cause is, I really
do we feel that, obviously, you know, Chris is, you know, Jack and Trevor and I spoke about this last week, you know, whether Chris was the one who was charged with going out to get victories for Citroen Racing, because the way they structured the team this year, it wasn't perhaps going for the manufacturers, obviously having, you know, a rotating driver lineup other than Chris. So perhaps Chris was charged with just going out and getting victories, and perhaps the fact that he was going out trying to get victories as opposed to just finish rallies, that was his undoing.
Well, I'm not quite sure that Chris would have wanted to go rallying other than with a wish to succeed. If they wanted somebody who is completely competent, they wouldn't, sorry, reliable. There are other people who could have done that job.
Yeah.
I mean, Mads Hosberg is an example, an absolutely perfect example of a safe pair of hands in the rally team.
Do you see a future for Chris within WRC?
I don't think so, no. Whether he wants a future in the sport outside the WRC, I don't know. I mean, it could be that he would have the opportunity to drive in a second-rate team, but I can't see that that would be attractive to him financially or for satisfaction. I can't see that.
Mm. Interesting. Now, we touched upon Asia-Pacific. We touched upon, of course, the Australian Rally Championship. I know that's something that you cover, of course, for Rally Sport magazine. We had Dean Herrig on after the previous round of the Australian Rally Championship, and of course this one was a merged round. Now, one thing that has happened over in Australia, and I'm interested to get your perception on this one as well, of course, over on that part of the world, you know, in New Zealand and in Australia, they've been pushing the AP4 car. You know, we've been talking about homologated cars and things earlier, of course. Now, AP4 Plus, of course, what was going on over in New Zealand, AP4 in Australia, and of course, with what's happened with regards to the Asia Pacific and the domino effect, of course, of the MRF team now going to WRC2 with Garvu Gill, is that there's now three R5s sat in Australia that are available for rent, and Eli Evans has rented one and dominated the first two rounds of the Australian Rally Championships, which must be leaving all the others now kind of scratching their heads, because no one really thought R5s were going to rock up over there.
Well, I would think that there was a deterrent against R5 financially rather than anything else. But what is interesting is the fact that they are still the best car to have anywhere in the world outside a World Rally Car. I'm interested in all alternative formulae they're getting, and I'm interested in the new names which are going on. I'm interested looking at Argentina for the last couple of years. We've had some weird and wonderful manufacturers being represented in Maxi Rally. And we're getting the same now with AP4. I see that the rally in New Zealand last weekend was won by Holden. And for the life of me, I can't have when Holden's won a rally before. So insofar as it's bringing new names into the sport, that's really attractive. And of course, looking back at R5, there can be quite a lot of people wondering where Skoda would be, unless it was formerly like Super 2000 and R5 available. And so there are other formulae outside the World Rally Championship, which is bringing manufacturers into the sport.
I guess the R5 category is become the category. I've got a personal opinion. This is purely my personal opinion, is that I think for the good of the sport moving forward, I think, and I'll get shot down by many, many people for saying this, I think R5 is the future, because I don't believe that the current 2017, as we call them, world cars are sustainable for anybody.
I think you're right. The only danger is that you're getting so many manufacturers, so many cars being entered in the same category, that it cuts out people interested in entering any other category, and that of course itself limits the variety of the shapes of cars on rallies. It's all very interesting to have 30 Skodas or 30 Fiestas, but when you think of all the cars which are not being used on rallies, that takes away some of the traditional attraction, where you could stand in the side of a forest and for the 10 cars going past, you probably have 8 different models, which you can't do nowadays.
Yeah, I hope that, you know, obviously we've seen quietly Hyundai with their customer program. Obviously, we know Keith Cronin was out at the weekend, who won a national round over in Ireland. The car he's going to be using for the remaining rounds of the British Rally Championship this year. And I know Chris Mellors is still working very, very hard to get the new Proton out there. You know, Volkswagen, of course, the almighty Volkswagen Motorsport are going to be coming with the Polo. So, you know, there's different shapes out there, Martin. And if they're all represented, then we're going to have a wonderful battle of R5 cars, I feel.
Different shapes, but not very different shapes. I mean, one R5 looks very much like another. It's easy to tell the make of the R5 by the colour of its sponsor than it is by... Oh, I mean, if you painted them all white... You just wouldn't recognise most of the cars.
I just think the future moving forward, I just think that's more sustainable than what we've got at the moment. That's my big fear of just how sustainable, you know, the current model is as fantastic as it is. Obviously, you know, the likes of M Sport, for instance, as well, you know, their business model was very similar to what ProDrives was back in probably the 90s of selling, you know, Group A versions of the Impreza as ProDrive did, you know, into Ireland and places like that. And of course, M Sport have done it historically of selling, you know, Focuses and Fiesta World cars over the last few years. But at the moment, we're not seeing 2017 cars because I don't know anybody. Well, we know Mads Osberg had one, but other than that, there's no other.
Nobody else.
I just don't see anybody else in a position to be able to run one.
Or federation allowing them to be used in national
rally. And that's my fear. So, you know, you just think of, you know, the revenue stream that perhaps, you know, M Sport have been obviously very successful with the R5 program, and that's obviously underpinning what they're doing. But yeah, you know, I just think it's very, very interesting moving forward. The future of the sport, which again, you were talking about earlier, you know, of how we underpin it and how we give it strength, you know, whether alternative energies come into play as well. I don't know what your thoughts are on alternative energies, Martin.
I have a long term. I think it's the only thing that we can do, because long term, internal combustion engines have got a restricted life.
Yeah.
But obviously, for all manner of different reasons, I don't know that we're going to see a huge swing. I mean, hybrid is obviously the way that circuit racing has gone at its top level and has been most important in the development of hybrid systems across the manufacturing board. But I don't know that rallying could necessarily be as helpful as we would like it to be.
Do you feel that? And my fear is, having been around Rallycross, for instance, and, you know, Rallycross and the promoter, IMG, we were Rallycross, you know, they're very big on trying to get alternative energy vehicles into, you know, their championship. And, you know, that's something that they're promoting, you know, moving forward. I think they've made a commitment by 2019 or 2020 or something like that. You know, I'm taking a punt at the date, but there is a point that they're working to for alternative. Could we lose manufacturers out of the World Rally Championship and go across to World Rallycross because alternative energy is a good selling point for them?
I can't see that. They might be interested in other factors which make Rallycross attractive for that reason, but I don't think it would be for this reason.
Now, just going back to what we started with regards to Citroën Racing, there's been lots of things that have been bandied around with regard to the future of Citroën Racing, and perhaps, you know, the announcement that has been made with regards to Chris moving forward, that, you know, could Citroën Racing be no more in 2019? You know, could that program be canned? Because we all know it's a very different Citroën Racing to what was, you know, the all-conquering one. Now it's very much, you know, ran by, you know, the accountancy side of the PSA group. Could we see Citroën leave us?
I don't see why they can't leave us, other than whatever affection we might have for Citroën. I can't see that. But obviously, there's a reason why people, manufacturers, get involved in the sport, and it could well be that for PSA reasons, they might prefer to have a Peugeot again at the top level. You just don't really know.
Yeah.
People have got a reason to be in the sport. The fact that we would like them in the sport is neither here nor there.
No, I couldn't agree more. Do you think the return of Ogier as a possibility in 2019, do you think that could reignite the fire of Citroën as a brand? And also, obviously, you know, the homecoming of the once junior got, you know, come good?
I don't know. What are we trying to do? Just convince ourselves that we can't do without Citroën?
I think we've all got, I've certainly got a soft spot for Citroën. The reason why I've got a soft spot for Citroën, as I have with Ford, of course, as I alluded to earlier when we were talking about IRC, they were the two brands that, for me, kept WRC going. I think if one of those would have went, I really, really fear what would have happened to WRC back in those days.
Well, there we are.
Yeah.
I don't know.
we've just mentioned, of course, Sébastien Ogier. Any thoughts on the loss of appeal and the FIA's thoughts on chicanes?
Plenty of thoughts.
Okay.
I think that people have just gone berserk in thinking about and getting confused about chicanes. The need for them, the obvious reason for a chicane primarily is to reduce speeds, but obviously it only reduces speeds in certain parts of a special stage, but it will do that. And numerically, you can say, oh, the average speed is now 115 kilometers an hour instead of 120 kilometers an hour. Therefore, it must be safer. Well, it isn't actually necessarily safer. Then, of course, the chicanes are used for other purposes. Spectacle, going round and round roundabouts. What's all that about? Then you get interference. To create these chicanes, you don't know how to do it. You don't know whether to make them immovable or whether they're simply the stakes, what would they call it, in the steeplechase racing, that you brush over. Who knows quite what is the ultimate purpose of a chicane. I'm getting increasingly concerned about how the Federation, how the authorities are looking at this. Well, I don't know to what extent they're looking at it at all, but when they're coming up with solutions like the appeal, the judgment in the Ogier case, the appeal, it's bizarre things. Well, you've got all these recommendations, these guidelines on what a chicane should be. But then they said, well, it's only a guideline. It's not a, it's only a requirement that it should be. Heavens alive, what is going on? People just got to get some clear head and think about what they're actually trying to do. I mean, I do know that making cars go round roundabouts in downtown super specials has got an attraction and bring people in to watch the rally and bring people into the town to spend money when they're there and all those type of reasons. But they've just lost the plot when it comes to thinking what it's all about. That I find very worrying.
Do you feel that, and my, you know, I haven't done, you know, UK events that have employed chicanes, you know, quite recently, a couple of years ago, across the Pirelli, that they had to put chicanes in to bring the general average speed down. And my interpretation of when chicanes are put in is purely on the from the insurance point of view. And there comes to a point where whether it's somebody who doesn't understand it, an insurer or whatever, but they need to see a statistic to see the general average speed brought to a level, perhaps that they will then grant, you know, a liability insurance or whatever it may be. Could it be something along those lines, maybe, even at World Championship level?
Well, not quite. I mean, I'm quite sure it is something to do along those lines, but to what extent that is really well thought out, I don't really know.
No.
I looked through this weekend, we've got the Sardinia Road Rally, and I looked through the road book, about 350 pages or something, and there's not a single chicane on the rally. Now, why do we have to have chicanes? I don't know. And then when you talk about convincing the insurance company that it must be safer because the average speed is lower, I think that's flawed, because it means that certain parts of the route will be safer, but not the whole route. Is the risk being reduced, insurable risk being reduced because of chicanes, it's not going to be anything other than minimal, in my opinion.
But if it's
nobody's thought about what to do with the formation, the form of the chicanes. Do we have immobile chicanes which damage the car if you hit them and therefore create their own deterrent for not following the right line? Or do we have these flimsy ones they have in Mexico, which any fast-moving car can easily move, maybe just through the vibration of the passing car or through the air of the passing car could shift the chicane? I mean, this is not thought out. Then we think about all the dangers involved, where a chicane has moved. Do marshals rush into the road in the middle of a live stage to replay it? Then we think about the unfairness in which drivers have a different line through a chicane after it has been moved. Then we think about, it goes on and on and on. I think as soon as chicanes are completely banned,
if I can just take you, I completely agree, by the way. If I can just take you, there's one addition to the entry list for Sardinia that is a welcome name back that I can't remember the last time we've seen them. And if I would have done a bit more research into this, probably could have been, I would have went on EWRC.com, would have known, Martin Prokop.
I
think it's great.
When he was in the World Championship, I always enjoyed being with him. It was always good fun. And when he said, okay, I just want to explore other parts of the sport, And he then got a sports car, Mercedes, was it? I don't know. And used it for sports car racing and enjoyed himself. Really, Bernie took up cross-country rallying, and he really has enjoyed himself. And he was doing one last weekend, and he really did well in it. And I think he's a great guy because he's there for the fun of it all, and he knows that from the company business, he can do it at this stage, but it won't be for the rest of his life. He'll be able to spend his time doing having fun. He'll have to take over his business in due course. I think it's just splendid what he does, and I'm a terrific pro.
Me too, me too. Can I push you for any kind of predictions for this coming weekend, Martin? Yeah.
In Sardinia? Well, a lot of it would depend on whether it's wet or dry. It has been wet recently. Traditionally, Sardinia is dry, and that means dusty. That means bad for the first car on the road. It's a puncture risk rally because the stages, the roads are quite narrow with damaging rocks on either side. It's interesting to know that one of the unspoken about developments recently in rallying have been the way that tyre development is escalating all the time. Michelin are developing this telltale puncture system, which the drivers say is not necessarily perfect at the moment, but then things never are when they really get to develop them for a particular objective. Then we've got the arrival of MRF in the World Championship with a view to having those tyres homologated and registered and therefore can be used in WRC2 next year. I think there's a lot going on in tyres which is a little bit confusing to the outsider, but it's fascinating. I would really enjoy it if people, so tyre companies took paid more attention to be able to share the work that they're doing with everybody.
Absolutely, absolutely. So you still didn't give me a prediction. I like the way you opted out giving me a prediction for the win this weekend.
Somebody doesn't have a puncture. Somebody has a clear run.
I'll let you sit on the fence on this one, Martin. Listen, yeah. It's been lovely to catch up, and I'm just conscious of how much time we've taken. Of course, we will welcome you back in a few weeks' time, if that's okay with you.
Happy days.
Martin Holmes, thank you so much for joining us at Absolute Rally. And folks, you know where we live now. It's @Absolute_Rally on Twitter and Facebook.com/Absolute Rally. We're back same time, same place, in a little podcast hole next week.